Richmond with Carolyn McGettigan and Nadine Levin, and we're here to talk about a paper that they recently published in the Journal of Experimental Psychology General. Yeah. And that paper is called Impaired Generalization of Speaker Identity in the Perception of Familiar and Unfamiliar Voices. Could you say your name so that people could learn your voices?
My name is Carolyn McGettigan.
Okay.
My name is Nadine Levin.
Okay, and you published this paper with Sophie Scott. Congratulations. JEP General is an amazing journal.
Thank you. Cheers.
We're having an IPA called Sound Waves. My first question is, what was your research question?
We were basically interested in the flexibility of the human voice, and many studies that have previously looked at how we recognize people from their voices have used speech stimuli. So the kind of thing that we're producing now, or in fact even more controlled stimuli than that, like recordings of sentences or single words, which are produced in a very controlled, neutral voice. And of course the voice makes all sorts of other sounds like that when we're emotional, when we're not using words at all, such as when we're laughing or crying. And so we were interested in working out what kinds of factors affect the perception of identity in the voice when you're not making any words at all. So when you're producing things like laughter and vowels.
Right. And so how did you go about answering that question?
Essentially, we recorded a lot of laughter because laughter was something we've been looking at before. We recorded these types of laughter, recorded different vowel sounds, and just played pairs of those to people and asked them to discriminate
between them. This was experiment one, because there were two experiments in this paper.
Yeah, they're more or less the same. There were pairs of stimuli that were vowels, volitional laughter, so that's laughter produced by people who are not amused. I was just asking people to please laugh now and to sound as positive as possible, which is hard. And then we had a third vocalization, spontaneous laughter, which is laughter that was produced when people were actually having fun, actually watching something funny in my little recording booth. So these were our three vocalizations, and we paired them up into six conditions. Some of them were within vocalization, so that means vowels were paired with vowels, and volitional laughter were paired with volitional laughter. And some were across vocalization, so vowels were paired with either type of laughter, and the two pairs of laughter were also paired up. And people just heard those and were asked to say, are these two produced by the same speaker or two different speakers?
And what did you find?
There was one main finding, which was that the presence of authentic emotion was much more difficult to deal with in terms of processing identity than if there was no authentic emotion present. And the other main finding was that when you ask people to compare across different types of vocalization, it really became much more difficult to process identity.
And people were basically for that almost at chance level.
Right.
And that was quite striking, because you would think that sounds produced by one vocal track, they can't be that different from each other, so you should be able to link them to the same vocal track. But seemingly, that's not the case. If you have laughter and vowels, things are just really bad.
Did you predict these findings?
Yeah, we actually did. Our key prediction was really about the presence of the authentic emotion in the stimuli. So we really had a strong hypothesis that if there was authentic emotion present, that should be costly to performance. And secondary to that, we thought if people are having to match identity across two different types of vocalization, it might be a bit more difficult. What it boils down to actually is we're interested in what happens to our perception of voices when the original talker has different levels of control over that voice. And one of the things that is true of spontaneous laughter is that it's correlated with an emotional state. And when someone is really amused and they're laughing out loud, they have a reduced control over their vocal system. And so things begin to spiral off in all sorts of unusual directions. Whereas what we do most of the time, like what I'm doing now, is trying to speak in a very controlled manner. And there are all sorts of predictions about even whether there might be different brain systems at play in terms of the control of these innate vocalizations like spontaneous laughter and the control of things like speech and song and acted emotions like volitional laughter. And so that was really our main research interest, because it's interesting what happens to the voice and it goes off in all these crazy directions. And also it's important for the literature, because it still is the case that the vast majority of studies on emotion perception use simulated emotions. They maybe will get people to think about a scenario that relates to feeling this emotion and then produce the sound that goes with that scenario. And the great thing about laughter is that it's rather amenable to actually getting people to genuinely go into that state and then record the spontaneous sounds.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the source of our interest. So really, it was really thinking about what happens to the talker when they make different types of sound, and then what are the implications for the perceiver.
This is one of the first studies that look at authentic.
Yeah. There's, well, authentic in general, but just like even modulated voice in terms of speaker identity. There's some very small studies on whispering, like people actively trying to sound older, things like that. And
wait, I have to break in because I helped you create stimuli for this. You have a soundproof booth, right?
Yes.
You're mostly soundproof.
Yeah.
Soundproof. So
yeah.
Nadine asked me to whisper these things into the microphone. And so I'm whispering, impaired. She comes in and she goes, I can hear you whispering from outside the sound booth. Anyway, it was great fun to do. All right, can you tell me a little bit about the second experiment?
We recorded lecturers from the department because they are familiar to the students of the department because they've been lecturing them and to other members of staff. So we could use these students as participants who are familiar with the voice without having to train them up, which is usually what other studies do, or they use celebrities, but we could have laughter and custom-made stimuli, so that was good. And we compared to unfamiliar listeners, which is what we had in the first experiment. These were just people from other departments. And what we found, as predicted, familiar listeners were always better for every single condition compared to unfamiliar listeners. Interestingly enough, and that's not what I would have predicted, is that there was no interaction at all, so they were consistently better. The performance was not flat or anything, so I would have thought, oh, you know a voice, so...
So across the board you would know.
So we'll just, we'll just know. But if you think about it, it makes sense again, because these students have mostly heard you guys just talk.
Drone on.
Basically, a series of vowels, which were in the study, volitional laughter and spontaneous laughter, were sort of just as unfamiliar to them as the unfamiliar listeners, but they know your general voice, so they could sort of get an advantage out of it, but not a massive one. And you would probably expect, if you would test people and have recorded their partners or their siblings or something, there might be quite a different profile. But with our type of familiarity, we got this profile with no interaction.
That was interesting. Do you plan on doing that type of follow-up?
So yeah, I think what's really, really interesting, and what was interesting for us using the familiar listeners, was this notion of generalizability. So if I know Laura's voice because I've heard her in lectures, just even having heard her speech, can I generalize my representation of her identity onto different types of sound produced by her? And the finding from that second experiment in the paper is showing us partway that yes, that's true, because obviously the familiar listeners were doing better on all the conditions than the unfamiliar, but because they were also impacted quite a bit by these manipulations, like the presence of authentic emotion and comparing across different vocalizations, it seems that they weren't able to fully and perfectly generalize from one condition to another. But you would predict, if it were the case that, let's say you're being tested on vocalizations recorded from your mum or your dad, and this is someone you've known your whole life long and spent loads of time with in all sorts of different social settings, or your best friend or your partner or whatever, then you might have a more robust representation of what their voice sounds like in all sorts of settings.
Right.
I suppose the working hypothesis is, if we have a representation of a familiar voice, does that basically chart out all the degrees of freedom of that voice?
Yeah.
Does it sort of define an acoustic space that I know that voice operates in because I've heard it operate in all those different spaces or parts of that space? And so what would be really nice to do is, next we would like to look at personal relationships. It's important to think about the sort of end state. If you were extremely familiar with someone's voice, what is the sort of range of your capacity to generalize one type of sound from them to another and know it's the same person?
Right.
But also, how do you get there? So one thing that would be quite interesting to look at is, how do people develop friendships? Find this in the voice literature in some way, do complement the face literature, but assuming some sort of equivalence between the face as a signal and the voice as a signal is quite a big assumption to begin with. And so I think what we're trying to delve into is, let's explore the voice as a voice without thinking about how it relates to the face to start with, and see actually what we find out about how we understand signals that are produced by voices.
Thank you so much for talking about your paper.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Cheers.
I would like for us to end on doing our best fake laughs. I'll do mine.
Okay.
That's pretty fun. That's good. Okay, Nadine, what do you got?
Oh my god.